Hey everyone, Chris here, one of your hosts of the Wandering Road podcast. I wanted to take a moment to include a preface to this episode, given the topic we are discussing today. We wanted to point out that we are providing commentary based on what we have noticed in our upbringing, and also taking a look at the historical perspective on the matter. This episode is philosophical in nature, and it's not to be taken as concrete truth or fact, etc. Dean and I find these conversations to be very entertaining for us, and we hope you do as well. The way that we go about this episode is the way we used to go about our conversations over a beer back in our graduate school days. With that being said, we appreciate all of our listeners and hope you enjoy today's episode.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Wandering Road podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean. And for today's show, we're going to have a general discussion or take a general overview on the Satanic Panic and our thoughts on Satan, Satanism. So kind of just encompassing just a general overview, general conversation commentary on that specific topic. We've had this on the back burner for a while, and we decided like, hey, today we're just going to talk about it. But before we get started with today's show, if you'd like to be a guest on the show to share your experiences, please reach out to us at our email address, twroadpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you and have you as a guest on the show. With that, we'll start today's show. How you doing today, buddy?
I'm not bad, man. I'm a little bit wavy on this one. There's another topic of challenge because we originally had another one lined up, and then we were kind of talking offline beforehand and decided that we needed to do way more research before we tried to tackle the original one we were going to talk about today. So this one is kind of like you said, is a back burner one. But we were talking about it in a little bit in depth before, and I think it could generate some pretty good discussion because there's a lot of different avenues to talk about, and all of them seem historically and philosophically interesting. So I'm kind of curious about this one.
Yeah, as am I, because to me, this is like a topic that people have over like a round of beers. Like, you know, you're at the bar with your buddies and then, you know, the sports game is over. And it's like, okay, what else do we have to talk about? And then everybody either gets like sentimental or something like that. They talk about something like that, or it goes the complete opposite way in the sense that we get super philosophical.
Yeah,
which we have done before.
I do miss those days. I have to admit, like, I do imagine like going back in time and like we're sitting around at a bar and like the most complex thing we have to worry about in our lives at that given moment is making sure we like finish a paper and then get ready for a test later in the week or something. You know what I mean? Like that's all we had to worry about. And we would just have a beer, a couple beers, get like tipsy and then just talk about life and philosophy. Oh man, yeah. I pine for those days.
You and me both, man. Now we all have to worry about all this stupid shit going on in the world.
Yeah.
It's like, take me back. Dude, like 10 years ago, we thought we were stressed, but
yeah.
Little did we know
what was going to happen. I still go back, like time to time, I'll still get like pop-ups on my Facebook, and it's like, here's a post from 10 years ago, and it was me like, oh, I just read two books, and now I got to finish a paper. And I'm like, you moron. You have no idea.
You had it easy.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah, pretty much. So let's start by digging into like some history of it. And before we started recording, you said you had found some stuff on Satan specifically. So why don't we start with there?
I will actually, the first place I want to start is, I remember growing up, you know, Catholic and stuff, and I'm not Catholic now. I'm like pretty much, I've said it before, I'm agnostic or whatever, but like, I'm a heathen. I'm a dirty, filthy heathen. Some might just call that open-minded. No, I'm just kidding. So So I remember growing up in small town America, being Catholic, and I'm sure it was way more amplified for a lot of other people, like, you know, maybe in the Bible Belt or something. But like, I still grew up in a pretty conservative atmosphere, and especially within the Catholic Church, and people were generally nice and accepting. But the thing is, it was also very clear that the concept of hell and Satan and all that stuff was to be admonished and pushed aside forcefully, and just no one wanted to talk about it. No one wanted to even dwell on it or think about it. And I remember actually picking up on that. And I, for a long time, I didn't want to talk about Satan. I didn't want to talk about hell or even say the words. So I think, like, for a lot of people still psychologically, it's still very much embedded. So it's not hard for me to talk about anymore. But at the same time, I feel personally like I have put up a block for so long about it that I don't even know if I could thoroughly explore it. How do you feel about it?
Fuck it. Let's go down this rabbit hole.
Okay.
Let's go down this rabbit hole. So I grew up Catholic as well. I was exposed to another religion growing up, actually two other religions growing up, because I have a very large family. But it was the same thing for me. Like, you really didn't talk about hell or the devil or anything of that sort. And what I found interesting, I don't know if this was the case for you, when I would talk about it, like at school or something, like, you know, you'd be in a philosophy class or even at university in a theology class, and then you start talking about that stuff. Even talking about that topic, you just got a sense of unease, like,
yeah.
Oh shit, like, is somebody looking at me? Like, am I being spied on? Like, am I going to get in trouble for talking about this?
Yeah. The air got heavy. I feel that, like, I feel like there's a lot of topics that are heavy, but like, definitely that one for sure. Cause I mean, let's be honest, the philosophical concept of a permanent state of pain, whatever that pain is, like, that is like, that's the worst thing that a human being can conceive of at our level. That's just, that's exactly what it is in a nutshell. It's the worst thing we could possibly talk about. So that's why people don't want to talk about it. But I think that it like anything else in life, as I get older, I realize that I really feel like we could, as humans, as a race, we could really deal with a lot of the issues we've been having by just being open and talking about how we feel about things and not putting up like hangups about certain things or avoiding certain things. Like, just talk about how you feel, talk about how you think. And then most importantly, don't judge other people or put shade on them for wanting to talk or think about it, because it's kind of like a release of stress and anxiety to talk about it. So that's what we're here to do today. Let's talk about it, and let's just like not have any covers or weights or hesitation talking about the discomfort and the weirdness of Satanism and Satan. So like you said, I guess the first place to start would be the historical narrative and the precedents for what Satanism is. And I mean, I don't want to go like too detailed because it's just going to bore people talking about like the history of Judeo-Christianity and everything. We've talked about that so much before, about Zoroastrianism and the, you know, the good God and the bad God, oversimplifying. But anyway, so talking about modern Satanism though, the research I just did is very interesting. I didn't know this, but I guess it really came about through mythology and literature from the 17th to the 19th centuries. I had heard about the story written by John Milton, and I think we actually had to read Milton in school. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was called Paradise Lost, and I'm pretty sure I had to read that for one of my classes. But I guess he portrayed Satan as a complex and charismatic character who was romanticized. He was Satan was pretty much shown in a light of humanism and struggle, and very much reflective of how we act and feel. And I think giving that perspective to people really screwed things up in a way, because it's like people then molded and meshed the idea of a terrible, terrible being who is only out to destroy God and all things good with the idea that the devil is through all of us at all times trying to like tempt us. And therefore we are doing things that the devil would do if he were human or if it was human. So like, bridging that gap to me just seems like nuts that some human made that gap, especially in the 1600s, probably at the height of like religion and organized religion and all that stuff in human history, for at least for Judeo-Christianity. But you being a historian, man, like, do you know anything about this period specifically from the perspective of like religion and Christianity?
What I do know is that Satan was used as the ultimate scapegoat to get rid of people you did not like. So
Salem witch trials.
Salem witch trials. We could go as far back as the Knights Templar, who became such a powerful entity. And I believe at one point they were actually so wealthy, they were lending money. And I could be getting this wrong because I'm just recalling it from the top of my head. It's been a while since I dove into Templar history. But I think the reason that they got persecuted and essentially wiped out is because the king of France owed them a lot of money. And they were a secret organization. Their entire organization for the foundation of it was to protect pilgrims going to Jerusalem, going to the Holy Land. And they got so powerful that they essentially had a stake in the geopolitical world and atmosphere at the time. So one thing leads to another. The French king they don't like them. They're very powerful. They're very powerful guild, secret society, whatever you want to call them, right? So there are so many terms you could use for them. And the number one accusation that they have is that they're devil worshippers, they're Satan worshippers. There were some claims even made that they worship the head of John the Baptist, the decapitated head of John the Baptist. They had all these heinous accusations. And as a result of that, they were all rounded up and essentially burnt at the stake. The same thing for Joan of Arc. And I referenced this before. If you were a powerful woman in the past, they'll find a way to get rid of you by relating you to Satan and being a witch. Could you imagine being a 16-year-old girl and you're like a seasoned commander and a 16-year-old kid whoops your ass and your army multiple times over with no battle experience?
I can't imagine that. It's like modern warfare where you're playing like a bunch of Korean girls or something like that. And
just destroying you're getting your ass whooped and you hear like a little 5-year-old kid at the other end and the mic just taunting you. That's kind of what it was. So Joan of Arc is an example. Accused of being a witch, which is always associated with making a pact with Satan and, you know, selling their soul to Satan. Pretty much anyone they didn't like, they would use the Satan propaganda to demonize them.
Yeah,
they even did it to use it as an excuse to persecute Jews in Europe in the Middle Ages. I don't know if it was the first or second crusade that they sacked a bunch of Jewish villages and basically sacked them to fund their campaigns. Like their own people and their own lands. You'll find very quickly as a recurring theme throughout history, the accusation of being a witch, worshiping Satan, is a big cop-out to getting rid of people that are challenging your position.
You know what's funny is it if I think about that perspective, it doesn't seem to stick, like the accusation of Satanism, it doesn't seem to stick against other people of organized religions. Because when I think historically, like even if someone back then were to accuse a group of Jews to be Satan worshipers or something, like that's just not something that ever branched off into a solidified concept that we have in the modern day. But we do have, I guess that's not true, actually. I guess you could say like Wiccanism or like Wiccan, which as we know today, like Wiccans are very much like they celebrate nature, like traditional Wiccan or whatever. But like the idea of being tied to nature and removing the idea of a one singular God from it as seen as could be seen as evil from the church or whatever. So like, I guess you could say that it was superimposed on some organized religions in a way, but it's funny that most of the time when you think of like Satanism and stuff, it's always like an outside group that has no direct ties whatsoever to any kind of organized religion. Except now, because of that, we now have a branch of Satanism that has come out of all of these things, like all of these occurrences through history. And we actually do now have an organized group of people in the modern day who call themselves Satan worshipers and the Church of Satan and all that stuff. But even more funny to me is that group has now morphed back into the Milton concept of like Paradise Lost in the 1667, where they are way more focused on the idea of Satan as a human, like romanticizing him. He's not just some evil character who's always out to screw humanity, even though like that's what the devil is supposed to be from the perspective of Christianity. So it's kind of like, and we talked about this on the podcast that we guest starred on not long ago. It's like, how many years of separation in human history do you have to get before you evolve to a new state of something, like a new state of religion, or even a new state of like physical being? Like, when does a human evolve enough to not be a human anymore within the context that we define it? So the same thing happens with the Church of Satan. Maybe in 100 or 200 years, someone will merge the Church of Satan with the Church of Christianity. And then it'll just be like, oh, the devil is to God what Krampus is to Santa Claus. And Krampus is not inherently evil. He is working with Santa Claus to make kids be good. So I envision a time in the next several hundred years where people will say, like, you know what? The devil, I don't think God, being all powerful and all knowing and intelligent, would create a being that would end up betraying him. God would be smart enough to create a being that actually is one step below his power, but works with him on the other end of the spectrum to show contrast for humans to evolve philosophically and in good spirit and stuff, and like become good people or whatever. And it wouldn't be this existential crisis between good and evil. It would just be like a test, so to speak. So I could really see that. I don't know. What do you think about that? What do you think about the evolution of religion and Satanism? Which way is it going?
The way that it's evolving, we could take a look at it from the perspective of the Vatican, right? Because there are so many, we live in the United States, there are so many denominations of Christianity in this country that they're not under one umbrella, per se. They all have their own different ways of doing things. But as far as Catholics go, we have the ultimate authority figure, which is the Pope. We have the Vatican. And whichever way the Vatican leans is the way in which most Catholics seem to follow. I think it was, I don't know if it was our most recent Pope, or it might have been Pope John Paul, or, oh geez, who was the Pope prior to this one? He was a German guy. I can't remember his name. His name escapes me. But I can't remember which of the three basically said that, yeah, if aliens do exist, we'll welcome them as brothers. We'll accept them. Like, they can be saved too, type of thing. But I don't see a world in which the two would ever combine or see eye to eye, because they are so diametrically opposed to what they stand for.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I don't foresee a situation in which they ever combine or even share ideas or have any type of civil discussion with one another. I mean, it's been a thing for thousands and thousands of years, because Satan in Catholicism and in Christianity in general is the ultimate enemy. And why would you want to, you know, combine or join forces with your, like, there is no reason for that to happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, I totally get that. Isn't it interesting though? It's hard to, cause think, go back like even 500 years, which is like a blip in human history. Imagine trying to, like, the type of Christian that you are, or the type of Christian that you picture a quintessential, like typical Catholic or whatever denomination. Imagine going back 500 years and remove the whole challenge of like conversing with language and terminology. Just imagine you could perfectly understand each other through some technology, but you go back 500 years, you try to have conversations with someone from supposedly the same religion as you. And especially if you go back even further, it would be even more pronounced. But you see where I'm getting at. It's like, if you have a conversation with someone in the same denomination hundreds of years ago, it's probably their morals and the ethics of the society at the time are not going to be as compatible. Like, there's going to be things that you and I do in modern day that they would find, that people, frankly, a lot of people would probably find horrendous and terrifying that we do now, or at least that we live in an environment that we deal with that, like, I don't know, like mass shootings or whatever, like that sort of thing. I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, like the craziness, the complexity of society nowadays. Like, it's good to take a moment and look around every once in a while. Like, we have this amazing, a lot of people have this amazing opportunity in this time period where we have comfort, we have food, we have jobs, we have all these things that didn't always exist in human history. Yet, even though a lot of people have a lot of comfort and freedom and money and stuff like that, we still have these terrible things happening around us that is unprecedented. The reason I'm talking about this, I'm not trying to go off on a tangent. I'm actually trying to tie this back into when we eventually talk about the satanic panic in the 1980s up through the 1990s in America. It's kind of reflective. It's like we have all these terrible things happening around us, yet we don't have a necessarily the same amount of reaction that people gave in the 80s and 90s when people thought Satan culture or Satan worship was really taking over America. And like nowadays, like, what do we have? Like, we don't have any great fears of the takeover, like the McCarthyism of like the looming threat of communism and all that stuff, just like the satanic panic was a looming threat of Satanism. I don't know. Is there anything reflective nowadays that kind of is in the same vein that you could think of? Or do you think it's just like all over the place?
I think it's all over the place because there's just so many things happening all at once. We have multiple wars going on. We have unfortunate shootings that take place, not just here, but there was one recently, I think it's a few days ago.
Yeah.
Was it yesterday?
I think so. Yeah.
So for context, folks, we are filming this on December 22nd, but you probably won't hear this till late January or early February. But yeah, I think in Prague, right? In the Czech Republic.
Yep. Yeah, that's surprising. Yeah.
Yeah. So things like that, if we want to tie it into some sort of satanic panic ever making a comeback, someone that's super religious could make the claim that, look at all of these terrible things happening. These are all the works of the devil because we've strayed away as a society from God, etc., etc. Kind of the same way that, you know, McCarthyism accuse anything and everything as communism. Yeah. Anything, any challenge to established order was communism. Oh, you don't like this thing because you're a communist. You don't like capitalism. You don't like the way this, you don't like monopolies. It's because you're a communist. And you still see that thrown around.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really fucking annoying. It's like, yeah. No, you dickhead. Like, no, like three companies should not control everything, but you need competition for a healthy economy, but I digress.
One of my daughter's favorite books that she likes to read nowadays is The Little Red
Hen. How to Be a Commie. Loves how to
get. No. It's hilariously enough, it's the opposite. It's How Not to Be a Commie, apparently, because it's basically, if you never read the story of The Little Red Hen, the whole crux of the original story is that she's trying to get all the animals around her in this like anthropomorphic world of hers where like all the animals have, they're like humans, they have jobs or whatever. And then there's like a baker and there's like a pig that's a fisher or like he like does some kind of like music or something like that. So she's going around trying to get everybody to help her at every stage of baking bread. So like harvesting or like planting the seeds, harvesting the wheat, doing the separating the wheat from the chaff and then like baking the bread. And then eventually like the whole story, they're like, no, I read that before.
Okay, I'm familiar with it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So like for people who aren't familiar, the end of the story is basically like, she goes through all the processes and like no one helped her out. And then she gets all cocky, all henny. And she's like, she's like, well, who will help me eat the bread? And then everyone chimes in, I'll help you, I'll help you, I'll help you. And then she's like, no, I made it myself, so I will eat it myself. I just think it's funny that like these stories that we have about like McCarthyism or like, you know, anti-communism and all that stuff, like this is how shit continues on in society. It's not necessarily that the people, I mean, there are people who teach their kids the morals and ethics that they grew up with. But I think a large part of it is also the concepts and the stories that we embed in our children unknowingly. I do wonder, like, when is the next big shift going to happen? You know, like, is it going to take a new world order or whatever? Like, you know, like the whole conspiracy of like all the countries coming together and no more borders and all that stuff. Like, I wonder what the next thing is going to be. But like, you, to go back to what you were saying, you were kind of you were theorizing about how like what would it take nowadays, and like in this very day, for someone to come out and say, oh, you know, Satanism is back, like, you know, all the, look at these terrible things happening around us. But here's the fascinating thing that I'm just realizing about human psychology. It seems like those things, like McCarthyism and Satanism, like satanic panic, those times in history, they seem to come about when there's a looming uncertainty and there's no one to blame. There's no boogeyman in front of you. The boogeyman is in the shadows. However, I feel like we're living in a time where the boogeyman is very much out in the open with, you know, like, this, just not to harp on mass shootings, but like mass shootings are very physical. They're very abrupt. They're very out in the open, and we see the aftermath of them. And I think that's why probably I theorize that that's why we don't see concepts like satanic panic popping up now, is because the specter of the actual thing we're afraid of is really happening in front of us. So maybe it's going to have to be like another shift to like peacetime. I think it comes out in peacetime when people are like most afraid, like what's going to come along and knock our peace off. It's our kilter. And that's what was going on in the 80s and 90s, where we had like, you know, technological revolution and rock and roll was coming to the forefront. And this new concept of like fun and excitement that kids were ingesting in media and music, like it was so strange and foreign to adults, and they were getting older. So I guess now our next generation to experience that are the boomers, because the boomers are going to get older. They're going to see things that kids are doing around them more and more, like virtual reality and all this stuff. And they're just going to be like terrified because the threat of death.
They are.
It's already they here,
are.
Right?
Most boomers are, I think, like the oldest boomers in their 70s at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're already there. And you see that fear with, well, like you said, with technology and everything like that. But you and I were, you were born in what, 87?
Yeah, 87.
Yeah. And I was born in 90. So you're an 80s baby, technically, because you were born there. But we didn't get a chance, which I wouldn't want to, grow up during the satanic panic. Yeah. And I know there were multiple accusations and lawsuits and all of these court cases, but I kind of want to talk about it from a cultural perspective and not get too nitty gritty with like all these lawsuits and stuff like that, because we know there are lawsuits and accusation of child abuse and all of these horrible things, sacrifices and whatnot. Whether that stuff happened or not, I'm not here to be the judge of that. Neither of us are here to be the judge of that. But one thing I did want to talk about is you could see when we were growing up, the remnants of, and for me, it was the rise of Pokemon. And I'll never forget that my mom, being Dominican and a Spanish speaker, she always watched Spanish news channels. And this was probably around 1997 or so. And it was at the height of Pokemon, and I had just got the new Pokemon Blue version, and they were running a report, and they showed actual footage of kids bringing their Pokemon toys to a church, and a priest stood there on top of the altar with like some sort of hammer or mallet or something, and was breaking the toys because they were saying this was a form of devil worship, that Pokemon, quote unquote, pocket monsters were demons.
Pocket monsters.
And me being 7 years old, I looked at my mom and I was like, Mom, this is not devil worship. This is a cartoon about catching essentially their world's equivalent of wild animals. And me being a 7 year old, being able to understand that and process that, it makes me wonder, how does the train of thought goes to these folks that it's, you get what I'm saying?
I've thought of this many times in my life, and especially as I get older, it's kind of crazy and terrifying. Like I think about how my parents were when they were the age I am now. My parents had me when they were younger, so I was a little bit more like, I was a little older when they were the age I am now. And I don't think that I'm anything like them in terms of my thought processes and my reflections. And I really contribute that to growing up in the 90s. Cause like I'm going to be honest with everybody. Like I really believe this, like the 90s to me in small town America was like the best childhood. I could have asked for. Like, I was in a big wide open area and I saw, I'm sorry, man, I know it's different for you because you grew up in the city, but like, but it's like, you know, wide open spaces and like, you know, lots of time to process things, lots of places to go and explore and lots of time to do it. And there wasn't any looming threat or anything like that. Like, you go outside at nighttime and away from the city, look up at the stars and kind of reflect on like philosophical questions and all that stuff. Like, I just feel like it was the perfect time. And we had like great cartoons, like, you know, Pokemon and like stuff that was like teaching us morals and ethics and stuff like that. And I just feel like it was such a wonderful time. So like, I think that shaped us, but then you have to wonder like what kind of environment, ask yourself, like, what kind of environment do you think your parents grew up in when they were the same age? Because it surely wasn't the same as what we experienced in the 90s.
At my age, my parents were working their ass off.
Yeah.
In New York City. So, you know, they didn't really have the time to discuss this type of stuff. Because I think it comes from you're raised a specific way with a specific moral code. And that's just, you just deal with it. It's like, okay, this is how I'm supposed to operate. This is this, this is that. And now I have two kids and I can't really focus on that. So I just have to continue.
Suppress it.
Yeah, I have to suppress it. But like, even I don't mean to steal the limelight from you or anything like that or steal your thunder, but I do recall I started reading the Harry Potter books and, oh man, like 99. And I read them all when they all came out. I know some crazy fuckers that read that shit in one night. I'm like, dude, what the fuck? Like, why? Why? But I digress. It's like, bro, sleep, enjoy the book, take time to process it. Like, these fucking things are massive. But even then you would say, see things like, well, you're not supposed to read Harry Potter because they're witches and wizards and that's of the devil. And don't recite those spells because those are real spells and you're not supposed to do that. So even though it's not, I want to say, a centralized satanic panic still going on, it still crops up here and there.
Yeah.
I really do think that's the case. And I don't know, man, I'll toss it back to you. What are your thoughts? I rambled for too long.
I'm so happy I finally get to bring this up on the podcast because I've been thinking about it a lot lately and I couldn't think of a time to interject it. But thank you for bringing up Harry Potter because one of the I'll just tell people really quickly. So I wasn't a Harry Potter head growing up. I kind of thought that like I didn't really get it. So I didn't avoid it. I didn't think it was evil or anything. It just didn't resonate with me when I was a kid. But my wife was and is a huge Harry Potter fan. We actually got engaged in Diagon Alley in Universal Studios in Florida. And that's a great
awesome
time. Like, yeah, it
that's
was so awesome. Great. I got to show you pictures sometime. So I got her her own wand and I put the ring on the wand and I put it in a box and I pretended to pick it off the shelf when she wasn't looking, like it was some random box, and I gave it to her. And it was all romantic anyway. But no, so she really turned me on to Harry Potter because I completely get the attraction. It's a great story. It's brilliantly written and the characters are awesome and the magic and all the stuff just like works so well. And I love it now. And I actually just got the Harry Potter Hogwarts Legacy. You probably saw me playing it recently on Steam, but like that game is so freaking good. So yeah. So, I mean, I guess I was just kind of emphasizing that the idea like Harry Potter nowadays is kind of different than when it was first coming out. Like you said, like people weren't sure about the connections to like Satanism and like the symbology and all that stuff. And now we know nowadays it's kind of like innocuous and not as serious. But one thing that I wanted to bring up for so long now, like, so I've said this before in other podcasts, but The Simpsons, like I think The Simpsons is brilliant, especially the older episodes. Like the writers are just on point in so many levels. And there's this one episode this one little joke in an episode where we zoom in to Ned Flanders reading a book to his sons, Rod and Todd. And they're like sitting down, looking up lovingly at their father, like everything's comfortable. And Ned is like starting the story or like getting into the story in a really loving tone. And this is exactly how it goes. He's like looking at his kids and he's reading the book. He's going, "And Harry Potter and all of his friends went straight to hell for practicing witchcraft." And then Rod and Todd are like, "Yay!"
I remember that.
You remember
that? I remember that. I do. I do. I want to. Sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you're not familiar with the Simpsons characters, Ned Flanders is like ultra religious and he raises his kids as ultra Christian. And that's just kind of the Simpsons writer's way of poking fun of like ultra conservative Christianity. Anyway, what were you saying?
How diddly-o, neighbor.
One. And of course they give Ned Flanders the biggest penis in the series, because there was an episode where like Homer saw a schlong or something. It was like massively huge, or they had a blurred out. It's just so like their comedy is so twisted and ridiculous. But anyway, I digress. I'm sorry.
But I want to touch into that a little bit. Not the Ned Flanders wiener, but but the whole Harry Potter and like, why is stuff like that, that I guess touches into magic and like a story of magic and witchcraft and fantastical stuff, like a fantastical world, is always associated with Satanism? I don't get it. I never understand it.
I could kind of posture a theory, though. And this is getting probably way too deep into it, but I imagine the reason is because like God, like the Trinity of God, the Holy Spirit, and Jesus, those are the only sources, like in Christianity, those are the only sources of pure light, goodness, and like good works or whatever. So like when Jesus did miracles, that was like literally directly from the power of God. So I think if you bring in the concept of like things that have power outside or away from that Trinity, then people think that the origin is satanic. And I can see that argument. Like, you know, only from the perspective of you're really Christian, you believe that. I can understand that concept. Like the only good source, or the source of goodness, only comes from God. So if it's a magic that comes from somewhere else, it must not be from God. I don't think that's a really good argument, but I think that that's probably why it's so embedded in our culture, like with the Harry Potter thing.
And it makes me think, like, what if I wrote something? I wrote a book similar to that, where there's magic, there's elves, there's dwarves, there's a magical world, they do spells, they do this, they do that. And I, for the sake of this conversation, am a better Catholic than I really am.
Yeah, I get what you're
saying.
Does
that make my influence come from Satan?
Right. Like I've said before, I was really good friends with a lot of ultra Christian, you know, like raise your hand to the sky, pray every day, read the Bible every day, like that really ultra leaning in Christianity. And I was actually interested to see the dynamic. So some of them completely shut out what you're talking about. Like they completely shut out the consumption of mainstream media. They only listened to Christian music. They only took in Christian media or news or whatever. And they didn't really watch movies or anything like that, other than maybe like, you know, movies that were geared specifically towards Christianity. So, but then also there were other people who were equally as pious and did, you know, practical exercises every day, believe just as hard, yet they were consumers of like video games and ideas about like stories about magic and Harry Potter, all that stuff. So like, that's interesting to me that there could be a divide there. But you brought something up that I think we could talk about briefly that ties into our topic for today, like the Great Satanic Panic of the 80s and 90s. The quintessential original example of this that we're talking about is Dungeons and Dragons. So I don't know if you probably heard this story. I see you shaking your head. And if you're listening, you're familiar, you probably know this story as well. So Dungeons and Dragons, if you don't know, it's kind of like a really complex board game. I'm probably going to get chastised by people who actually are D&D players for calling it a board
JJ.
Game. JJ, you can correct me. It's not really a board game, I guess. It's an experience. And you have someone who is in charge of the unfolding of the environment around you, and they roll this dodecahedron dice, I think, and then like, and based off of the numbers that roll out and the guidance from the master of the game, like you kind of have scenarios unfold. So it's like there's quests, and it's very mythical. It's very not Harry Potter. What's the other big one that's
Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, sorry, it's very Rings. Yeah, very Lord of the Rings. I feel like that's a good benchmark because a lot of people know Lord of the Rings. So anyway, back in the 80s and 90s, and I would love to get JJ. You brought that up, like JJ's a little older than us. He grew up in that time period, so he probably has so much to say about. But
I want to say real quick, like in my conversations with JJ, when we did two episodes, well, it was a two-parter that I appeared for the Southern Demonology show called Hail Thyself. It was in part one and two. And we talked about the Goodnight Baphomet book. And we also went into a discussion about Satanism in general and the Church of Satan and the whole concept of it. And we based it around that book and Art Bell's discussion with Blanche Barton, who used to be a high priestess and Anton LaVey's, I guess, partner while he was still alive. And she is at the time of that interview, when she was talking to Art Bell, she was still part of the Church of Satan, apparently like the head of a council of nine or something. And I always make fun of it, saying they're the nine Nazgul, because the Church of Satan came around like in the 60s, and The Lord of the Rings, I think, was fully published in the 50s. So Anton LaVey, being an academic, probably read it. And I was like, you know what? Nine Nazgul, Council of Nine. Yeah, right. But I digress from that. But JJ did mention to me, like, both on shows and offline, that there were some people that kind of yelled at him for playing D&D and told him he was going to go to hell for it.
Oh, I remember that. He did bring that up before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is a perfect opportunity to kind of set the record straight, because, like, regardless of whatever your beliefs are, it is fact that whatever, like, you could argue that the origins could have started from someone who was Satan, but, like, the actual game itself is, it borrows symbolism from different religions, right? And I think one of the things that people focused on way too much back during the Satanic Panic was, like, the use of, like, pentagrams, or maybe, like, creatures that had like the picturesque Satan view of, like, the devil horns and the goat feet and all that stuff. And, like, but that's all they saw. Like, what is when you don't know something, when you don't understand something, what do you focus on primarily first? Something that makes sense to you. The only thing you can consume from your perception. And I guess they understood or saw those symbols and they knew them. And as soon as they saw those symbols, like, which are negative in their own perspective, that automatically made the game negative. But in reality, the game is supposed to be completely removed from our reality. It's supposed to be a whole other universe in which you can imagine and grow and operate or whatever. And there's nothing actually religious or satanic about it. There's nothing even in the game that alludes to Christianity or Satanism. So I think that it really stemmed, like, a lot of things from misunderstanding and misinterpretation and fear, just like the same story goes for every single generation whenever something like this happens.
One thing I want to touch on with the Satanic Panic, if you look at the history of the United States, and if you look at it, I'd say up until the 60s, until we had, like, the hippie movements and all of these rock bands and the Summer of Love, you nasty bastards. But...
don't harsh my buzz, man.
Like with South Park, when Cartman gets called to get rid of hippies, like an exterminator. But I think maybe this is just me speculating that we could probably trace it as far back as that. Because if you look at the 40s, the 30s, just, you know, in the United States up until that point, like, there was so much turmoil in the 60s. You had the civil rights movement and you had race riots in some cities. The Vietnam War was raging. So to me, I think that's where it all starts from, in the sense that but the people at the time are fighting back against the societal norms. If it pisses anyone off, but I mean, seriously, go pull your head out your ass. The societal norms that were attacking people of color for just being that. And it's like, okay, then, like, you segue into these bands and stuff, like getting away from the social order. If does that make sense to you?
kind of breaking away from what was viewed and deemed as the normal order because it was so repressive and oppressive at the same time.
One of the things I struggle in my personal life, like emotionally with, is the idea that we are who we are largely because of the environment in which we were born. It's really hard for me to come to terms with the idea that I consider myself, I am not a saint. I'm not someone who's perfect, but I do comparatively.
You're saint.
I'm a saint asshole. comparatively speaking, though, to other historical comparisons and people and stuff like that, I think that, like, I shudder to think what it would be like to be a type of person. By the way, this type of person still exists all across the globe this day and age. But I shudder to think what it would be like to be the type of person who's sitting with other people at a kitchen table discussing about, like, let's go back to the civil rights movement, talking about African Americans and saying things like, oh, can you believe, African Americans, and I'm sure they didn't use as an eloquent as of a term, but like African Americans, can you believe they want their own rights? Can you believe that they want to use, the same water fountains and the same toilets and stores and all that stuff? Can you believe that? Like, can you believe that that's our reality? Like, and that's just the time. I'm not being an apologist for them, by the way. I'm just saying that if you want an answer partially for why people are the way they are, you have to look at their upbringing and the time period in which they were born in. So
I agree.
Yeah. You can't just have a conversation about Satanism because, I mean, for instance, doing my research, I discovered that there is a stark difference between Luciferism, traditional ideas of Lucifer and the Catholic faith or the Christian faith, and the Satanic Temple that it came about in 2013. And the thing I find the most fascinating is, and again, not to be an apologist or a supporter of Luciferism or the Satanic Temple, but the thing that they highlight the most isn't the quintessential traditional idea of Satan, which is the harbinger of doom and the bane of humankind, the separation of God and humankind. Like, that is not the purpose of those. The purpose of those is to elevate humanism and the separation of church and state and really try to keep organized religion out of certain parts of our lives. And again, not being an apologist, but like just saying that is a very different perspective than a traditional Christian from the 80s and 90s who gave into the satanic panic would have perceived about those things. Because all, just like Dungeons and Dragons, all they would have seen was the perspective of the symbolism from the pentagram's perspective and the goat feet perspective, but they wouldn't have actually delved into the mechanics and the makeup of the game itself, just like they don't delve into the dynamics and makeup of these organizations. So I think that if you really want to have a conversation about the satanic panic and how things happen psychologically in society, you have to look at all ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I agree. And if you look at the music at the time, like the metal music and the hard rock music and whatnot. I mean, I listen to that shit sometimes. I listen to fucking Slipknot sometimes while I'm running because Absolutely. It's just, it just the gets mood. The, yeah, yeah, it really does. But that doesn't mean I'm going to go and like want to join a fucking cult or something like that. I think that's where we, at the time, people weren't able to disassociate their personal feelings towards certain things as to what those things are exactly doing. They're merely there for entertainment purposes.
Yeah.
Because there are groups out there, you could probably find them, that will tell you exactly what they're about. I'm pretty sure there's a cult out there that's, yeah, we're trying to like summon Baphomet. Like I'm just speculating, but I'm sure there probably is.
Yeah.
There's a group out there that's probably trying to make sacrifices to fucking Ares. Like,
yeah,
you can't, I don't know. It's just, this is a conversation. I know that people probably wanted to hear more about Satan and the devil and this and stuff like that. But I think it's one that we need to, I think it's a discussion that we need to have. That are there certain things that have satanic symbolism? Yes. Are there symbolisms ingrained into certain aspects of our society? Yes.
Teletubbies.
100%. I love the Teletubbies. You leave the Teletubbies alone. They were my favorite show growing up. The bananas in pajamas.
Oh my God.
But you get what I'm trying to say, dude.
Yeah. The symbolism doesn't necessarily reflect the actual beliefs of the people who created them. And sometimes they're leaps, actually. Like, I think one of the satanic linked cults or religions that came about in the 60s was actually it actually originated with the Egyptian god Seth or something like that. And because it was not inherently or like connected to Christianity, it was automatically adopted from a different perspective as being Satanist. But I want to bring up really quickly, like with the whole music thing, I also grew up in, so even though I grew up in the 90s, in small town America in the 90s and early 2000s, 80s rock and roll was huge. And I grew up listening to radio stations in Western PA that were like really heavily oriented towards rock and roll. And I used to love that so much, like in a car with my friends driving around at nighttime, listening, like blasting.
WDVE.
Yeah, WDVE. Remember the morning show? Oh my God, they had such funny stuff back then. They had really funny
stuff. Dunce, Carnegie Science Institute.
What was it again? It's like, what does CSI stand for anyway? Dunce. Carnegie Science Institute. Oh man, I gotta find that again. Anyway, but like we're confusing the shit out of all kinds of people right now. But anyway, so the music that we grew up with, like rock and roll, I completely agree with you. Like even like some people and like parents and adults around me who I would not perceive as ingesting that kind of media, like they would listen to it or rock out all the time. That was so great. It was just something to connect people and to be cathartic and all that stuff. So, but there is a great movie that I haven't seen in years. And just because we've had this conversation, it popped into my head. I need to rewatch it. It's called Detroit Rock City. And it came out in like 99.
You're going to say Little Nicky.
Little Nicky. That's funny, man. I guess I could watch that too again. The whole Satanist thing. But Detroit Rock City, it really encapsulates the idea of the satanic panic and like what was going on when rock and roll was burgeoning and like the fight between conservative parents trying to wrangle their kids and the kids just trying to be typical kids and be free and explore, and the friction that caused and stuff. And I recommend watching Detroit Rock City if you find this whole conversation interesting. It's actually pretty funny and mind opening. But I kind of like jumped ahead a little bit, and I don't want to revisit it too much because, excuse me, I'm looking at my notes. I guess the last thing that I want to bring up, or, you know, I guess if we have more time, that's cool. But like one other big thing I wanted to bring up was asking your perspective, Chris. So when you were talking to JJ, you guys were talking a lot about like the Church of Satan and all that stuff and like the evolution of that. You probably got way deeper and way better of a perspective from him than I could possibly bring up. So what did you guys talk about specifically? Did you talk about the concept of like Luciferism? Did you just focus on the organization of the Satanic Temple and what they stand for? But like, what is your general perspective and discussion that you had with him on that?
But what we basically focused on was what the former high priestess said with regards to the Church of Satan and their beliefs that they have and some of the rituals that they have. And I'll give you an example. So one of the rituals that they have, I think it's called the destruction ritual. Here's the example that she gives on Art Bell's show. Let's say you're at work and there's somebody there that you don't like, and they're always constantly picking on you and harassing you and trying to get you in trouble, right? You, as a Satanist, will go to your church. You will go into the ritual room. And you'll perform the destruction ritual, and you'll let all that anger and frustration that you have out, right? And as a result of that, the example she gives, it continues, you get to work on the Monday, and that person is no longer there. They got promoted, and they're in Hawaii at like a VP position. But then you find out, as part of that promotion, they're crossing the street and then they get hit by a bus. But it doesn't matter because your ritual worked. So that's kind of what we talked about. The specific way that they view quote unquote humanism, in that it's a very perceived as very selfish from what she was discussing. So this is the only source that I could draw upon because I didn't do a deep dive on the Church of like Satanism in general. So that's kind of what we had the discussion on. We didn't really talk about Lucifer himself or anything like that, but more so how someone was trying to advocate for people joining the satanic movement by saying that you could do whatever the hell you want. It kind of had no regard for other human beings. Like, this is the example that I gave when we talked about it. You know, in the Bible with Cain and Abel, how Cain kills Abel, and then God comes down and he's like, Cain, where's your brother Abel? And Cain goes, am I my brother's keeper? And it's like, yeah, you're your fucking brother's keeper. You have a moral obligation to not harm another human being just because you don't like them. When we talk about self-defense, that's a completely different story because, yeah, you have the right to defend yourself as a living being. Like, you're not going to sit there and let someone fucking kill you. But what you shouldn't do is try to advance yourself at the expense of other people and knowingly do so, which is what we discuss in that podcast, what they seem to be advocating through the lens of humanism, all the while saying that, no, we don't worship Satan. But there are times where she contradicted herself in that podcast in which they say that their leader did conjure up Satan and did sell his soul, yada, yada, yada. So that's kind of the discussion that we had. And I can see the look on your face. You probably have like a million and one questions or things to say.
if you took out all the references to Satanism and Satan and all that stuff and everything you just said, and you imposed like the Crusades, it would still work. That's what fascinates me about organized religion. And by the way, not taking any shots towards Christianity as a concept. I think Christianity as a concept is completely beautiful. You have the divine being sending down some offspring to right the wrongs of the world and heal people and all that stuff and preach like kindness and understanding and empathy. Like, all that stuff is awesome. When you get to the organized religion part and meshing that with like the desire for human expansion, like you said, and trying to fit that in the context of humanism and going around and knocking over buildings and trying to assimilate people into your own belief structure. Like, it's so crazy to me that that's the reality we live in. Like, justification doesn't matter if it's Christian, doesn't matter if it's Hindu, or doesn't matter if it's Islam, doesn't matter if it's Satanism, could be like whatever justification, but like the forcefulness of getting what you want from your organization's perspective doesn't matter what other people want. And that's not humanism at all. That's not inclusiveness and consideration at all. So I think that's why this is kind of like getting off on a tangent, but I think this is exactly why you have people who are Christian and they'll say things like, I don't need to be close to God and I don't need to go to church to be close to God. In implying that they don't need organized religion to find their own way. But then you flip that around and say, like someone who's a priest would say, oh no, or even an imam in Islam, you're like, you know, you need someone to interpret the holy text to guide you because you can't do it yourself. You're not trained. You're not divined by God. That's just like, what a whirlwind like of just insanity.
Something that you said there, like you need someone to lead you and guide you to help you understand and interpret. What do you do when the people that are doing that flip it on its head?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And tell you that if you kill non-believers, you are absolved of all your sins. If you embark on this crusade to reclaim the lost Holy Land, which they did in what year was that, dude? 1096. Oh, on August 15th, 1096. Let's say, for example, there's a huge congregation of crusaders in Rome, and they're being blessed by the bishop, and the bishop is saying, you are hereby absolved of all of your sins because you are embarking on a journey to fight for God. When you know that in the process of doing that, you are breaking a commandment.
The first commandment, right?
Thou shalt not kill. So that's where it, see, that's where it gets dicey. It's like, okay, if I say I don't need the structured organization to be close to God, then I'm a bad person. I'm not a true believer. But if I do go into the structured religion and I do listen to the quote unquote religious leaders, and let's say again, let's go back to 1999, and this religious leader starts spouting bullshit that Harry Potter is satanic and sends the entire congregation into a panic, satanic panic. But where do we draw the line? Is it really a satanic panic, I would say? Or is it a mechanism of control for the fear of the loss of control because of society becoming more secular?
It's definitely a loss of control because of like mass media and the need. But here's the funny thing. It's not some centralized organization or like group of like panel who's just like orchestrating all these plans and implementing them to a T. It's people in, you know, traditional society or traditional capitalism seeing opportunities to capitalize on fear and uncertainty and doubt, and then, in, you know, perpetuating the media because they know that they're going to get more viewers. They know they're going to get more media consumption if they focused on the hot topic issue. But then it's a closed loop feeding system where it's just being recycled and growing into this massive monster of fear that isn't being orchestrated again by anybody, any one person. It's just like an unfortunate balloon filling with hot air of fear. But just to jump back really quickly to what you were saying that I found fascinating, idea that, you know, like imagine if you have a child, right? And the child is not as knowledgeable as you. The child is arguably more innocent than an adult. Yet the child was convinced to do something and they did that thing under guidance of another person who was older than them, who had more knowledge than them. And even though they did that thing that might have been really heinous or bad, and they could have, you could still also argue that maybe they said that they had a feeling that it wasn't good, but they still did it because they listened to their superior or their elder or whatever. They still did it. Are you only going to focus on, you know, you're not going to, I mean, it's a redundant question. It's like, you're not going to focus on correcting or blaming that child for the thing that they did under the guidance of somebody who was stronger or more powerful or more convincing of them. So that's why I always think about this, like now and again, I think about this, like if you have the idea of Satan and the Satan is literally one step below God and not anything like God, completely separate from God. And the thing in reality that will guide you away from God. But he's also infinitely more, or might as well be infinitely more powerful than us and able to trick us and whatever, like send anything our way to completely mess up our life and just take us down the wrong path. At the end of your life, can't you just throw that back to God and be like, well, I'm like a child and I was misguided by this thing more powerful than me, even though I have like a sense of moral compass. Like you said, you could be easily misguided by someone coming along and trying to change the justification to say that killing is okay in the name of God. If you truly adopted that belief, or you truly adopted that everything's going to be okay and you do the negative thing, can you really be 100% blamed and blamable for that thing you did? And that's why I wonder, you know, if God does exist and God did create Satan, or like the idea of Satan, maybe it's the ultimate way to get everybody to heaven. Like the ultimate way to get everybody to heaven, every human to heaven, is to eventually come down the pike in the original point, which is all the way back at the devil as being the primary blamer. And then somehow that is a way to, but then again, of course, I know I can already feel the heat coming from Christianity, like Christians saying like, oh no, that's Jesus's job to remove, only Jesus can remove sin and all that stuff through forgiveness. But I was just thinking of like ways to kind of justify and fit in the idea that there is always some entity more powerful than you under God that is capable of leading you away with a full arsenal that can lead you away. And like, in what way are you completely responsible by going down that pathway? I'm sure like you probably have a completely different perspective. So please chop me to bits on that.
I mean, yeah, the hierarchy, like if you talk about the hierarchy and the way that it functions, yeah, it to put it bluntly, yeah, it's a scare tactic. But one thing that I always come back to, because I know we went from talking about media and satanic panic in media to theological discussion. But from that perspective, you got me there, dude, because
I stumped the Christian. I win the game. I stumped the Christian. No, I'm just kidding.
No, because in all seriousness, Satan is there to deceive and to try to get you to turn away from the path of God. But in your example, correct me if I misunderstand it, Satan is being used as a mechanism by God to get people to go to heaven. Is that correct?
Yeah, essentially, because and the reason I would argue that is because if God is truly omnipotent and all powerful and the perfect planner of all existence, and see, this is why I love going back to this conversation about what's the nature of God. And I promised everybody I'm not going to I'm just going to say one thing about this and we won't go down this rabbit hole too far. But I think it was Thomas Jefferson who was a proponent for this idea that philosophically or theologically that God must be a being that created reality, but stepped out of reality and lets it run as he initially started it. So the initial mover is God, and anything that happens within the realm of reality is untouched by God. So anything he created is already happening here. It's already unfolding, and there's nothing that God will do to reach in to change or alter anything because it's already been set into motion. So if that's the case, if you subscribe yourself to that belief like Thomas Jefferson did, then if you're Christian, you also accept the idea that there is a negative force in the universe that was created by God that was also set loose within this reality. So if my dumbass brain, my dumbass human brain can think of that idea, then I think God must be way more capable of thinking way more complex planning an idea and layout. So I know this is going to sound so terrible to some people because there are some things that happen to people in this world, in our life, the Holocaust or whatever you could think of, the most heinous things happening to certain people because of the hand of other people. But at the end of the day, I can't accept that if there's an afterlife that you just go for the sake of your own experiences in your life, you go to a permanent place of torment or pain or suffering. The only way that I would believe, the most beautiful thing about existence I could possibly perceive is everybody forgives everybody at some point in some progression, whether it's in this life or the next life, or maybe we have multiple lives we live through, but at some rate, there's a reckoning of forgiveness and love and peace and equilibrium in the universe. And I don't know if I would say that that's traditionally the idea of heaven, like going to a place that is like clouds and rainbows and harps, but this great equilibrium of bringing all the souls, all the things, everything back together and being together in harmony and peace and love and all that stuff. Like to me, that would be the best ending to the universe, to like all religion. So if I could think of that, then why couldn't it be the case that the evolution of God, the evolution of religion and humanism and all that stuff is ultimately going towards that pathway, whether it's, 100 years from now or 100,000 years from now. That's just my crazy ass, probably borderline stupid perspective.
No, it's justified. It's a perspective that you have based off of your academic background and what you read and what insights you have because you have been in the faith. I remember when we met, you were in that ultra religious vein. Yeah. Like, we would go to the dining hall and we would get food and you would literally say grace. Like you would literally pray and I would wait for you to finish. Like
you asshole. I mean,
but I mean, like it's a valid perspective. Like for the sake of what we do here, I just want to say, this is just commentary. This is just a discussion.
Yeah.
We're not telling people to lean one way or another. No. And I'll add a preface to the beginning of this episode as well. Before anyone gets their panties in a twist.
Yeah.
Because I know there are people like that. But it's you're entitled to your opinion the same way I am as well and everybody else. But for me, from my perspective, going all the way back to again, theological, real quick, the rebellion, because he didn't want to bow down to humans, to Adam, and the rebellion of angels and the Nephilim and all this other crap that encompasses the entire conflict. I too believe that people shouldn't be punished based off of their experiences, especially if you don't know any better. But the people that I think that are going to be in eternal damnation are people like Hitler and people like serial killers like Richard Ramirez or H.H. Holmes, people that had multiple opportunities to not engage in an act to harm another human being, but they chose to do so. And I always like to give the example of the Buddhist monk in the Tibetan mountains that is in like 200 BC and doesn't know anything of Christianity because it wasn't around at the time. And they live a virtuous life. Does that person get condemned to hell because they don't know? Is the lack of knowledge enough to condemn someone? I don't think that's fair. I know there are others that say yes, unfortunately, but that's where I'll digress from the theological discussion. What I did want to, I'm sorry, did you have anything to add to that?
I just want to say one final thing, and maybe we could save this for a deeper discussion later, so feel free to just kind of pass this off. But one last thing I want to say was, with your example of like Ramirez or Holmes or Hitler, I mean, to a lesser extent, Hitler, I don't really know what Hitler's makeup was, but like you could argue that Holmes and Ramirez and serial killers in general, if you go all the way back to the beginning of someone's life, what if you found out that they did have a possession, or you found out that they did have some kind of abuse by another person or something that set them down the path that wired their brain in such a way, or they weren't responsible for pursuing that pathway. And there must be examples where there are people who have free rein to make decisions, like you said, but I think there are also probably examples of psychopaths and serial killers, especially, to where they have brains that we, you know, nowadays we understand in modern medicine that some of these cases, if not a lot of these cases, your brain is already hardwired to be antisocial or in a way that is, you know, trying to harm or sociopathic or whatever. It's literally a hardwiring issue of the brain. So if that, you know, some people argue like, oh, God creates all human beings from the beginning, and then we go through our pathway and we make decisions, moral decisions that dictate whether or not we are with God or against God. But if God is the creator, but also if, you know, Satan can reach into our reality and manipulate us with terrible things happening, like, you know, or just any kind of spiritual, like say like the jinn or the tengu in Japanese religion, or I mean, Japanese culture, like something spiritual that can mess up a human life and set it down the wrong track forever. Like, in what way is that person responsible for the rest of their lives and all the actions they take? And I'm sorry, I know that's like extra heavy and extra complicated, and I know nobody has an answer for that, but I just wanted to drop that out there as an extra perspective on what we were talking about. So we could feel free to move on, or yeah.
I'll address that quickly. Okay. And this is just my opinion. In the case that someone is possessed, I would be interested in the manner of how it happened. Mm-hmm. Did they welcome the possession? Mm-hmm. Did they try to mess with something like that? But if they are possessed and they committed all these crimes, watch the movie Nefarious.
Okay.
That it literally addresses your situation that you talked about just now. So if they are possessed, I would say that it's the actions of that preternatural entity controlling that person.
Right.
But then you go into a deeper rabbit hole of, you have to have a psych evaluation, you have to bring in the clergy, you have to bring in all that stuff. But if you're saying that this person is possessed, they kill 50 people and they get executed, but the entire time they're professing their innocence, saying they were possessed, and then they die, and then they go to the afterlife, I think you're asking, do they go to hell or do they go to heaven? I think in that situation, whoever's judging, whether it be St. Peter at the gate, the stereotypical image we have of St. Peter at the gate of heaven, judging to let you in, or God, I think that's where it's, I think in that sense, God would know that this individual did not commit these acts out of their own free will. They were possessed by the enemy. Therefore, their soul should not be punished. And that's just my perspective,
right,
of how I think it would go. But what I did want to ask with regards to the satanic panic in general, do you think it's going to start making a comeback? Because I know there's huge conspiracy theories within the music industry about, you know, them doing all the symbolisms with the eye and the pyramid and all this stuff. And you've had music artists come out and say that the reason that they didn't make it is because they didn't want to subject themselves to that stuff, to any satanic type of ritual. What are your thoughts?
I always, when I hear stuff like this, I always go to a global perspective. The reason I chuckle is because every time you hear a story like this, or every time you hear a conspiracy theory like this, it is within the bubble or the context of our immediate American society or North American society or whatever. Even if you want to expand it down into South America, like, okay, you're talking about still within the bubble of not even half of the amount of population on the world in the world. So like, let's shift all the way over to Japan, for example, or whatever, South Korea. I guess South Korea is a bad example because South Korea has a really big Christian following, but like, let's stick with Japan or even China. So in those countries, they have their own social media. They have their own rock bands and movies and movie stars. And it's just, it's completely superimposable and comparable to the United States in the sense that all those things exist that we have no idea about, that just don't, I mean, BTK or whatever, like, you know, that's an example of South Korean kind of being adopted by America and stuff like that and becoming more mainstream here. But they have so, like, you know, like Asia Pacific has so many more movie stars that we'll never hear of, like A-list movie stars in their countries that are very well known, very rich, do a lot of movies, and same with singers and all that stuff. So do they also have to get involved in Satanism? You know, 'cause Satanism from my perspective is purely a Judeo-Christian thing. I don't think most people in Japan are Judeo-Christian. And so you'd have to accept that if that was the case, that all of the media conglomerates around the world are all worshiping this Satan entity or whatever that is specifically within the sphere of Judeo-Christianity. So I have to be extremely skeptical about stories like that and the whole leap towards symbolism. And because let's not forget, like, you know, it's not just Satanism. It's also a certain organization by which I will not say that may or may not be connected to Satanism and stuff like that. You know, you see people do videos about, like, you know, catching things in movies, like symbolism and all that stuff, and making massive claims of leaps and stuff like that. But I mean, I don't know.
If I may interject.
Please. Yeah.
I'm not saying in the sense that they actually worship, but in the sense that they intentionally use it and they intentionally incorporate it as a way to
spread fear.
I want to say, now this isn't, this is from what I've like seen from like former artists that left the industry saying that, hey, I didn't want to sign my name in blood, so I didn't want to do this, I didn't want to do that. But taking aspects of it, because, you know, in any business deal, whenever you sign a deal, someone always has a leg up. I guess they just use that as their mechanism. Again, this is only speculation based off of a conspiracy theory. But I mean, like, you can look at music videos and shit, and you can see, like, the Eye of Horus. You can see all these different things. So, not saying the Eye of Horus is satanic, but which some people say it is.
I mean, we have a giant obelisk in our capital, which to me is... Come on. It's like...
The Washington Monument No, it's Bill Clinton's monument.
I saw a drawing recently. It was really crudely drawn, but it was like the Easter Island heads, and then like Stonehenge was the feet, and then the dick was it all lined up. The dick was the Washington Monument. I thought that was ridiculous and clever, but anyway, yeah. So like I'll be honest. I don't think Satanism in terms of a fear mongering technique is going to come back anytime soon. I think, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the specter of the things that we have issues with in society are already present, and there's nothing really looming in the background again yet. But I do think, I mean, I have heard, actually, that's not true. I did hear in the last few years, this idea coming back, especially with the COVID vaccine, by the way, remember COVID? Like, that feels like a lifetime ago. Like that's, and it's still crazy to me that that actually happened to our society. But remember when the whole shot thing, like getting the vaccine, people were like making these wild claims and connections to like chemicals that were in there that had like satanic symbols associated with them. And it was like, oh, they're trying to inject a microchip that has 666 on it or whatever. And, but if we go back to the conversation we had with JJ, who is, you know, well-versed in all of the symbolism and religion and stuff like that from Christianity and the Bible, JJ was saying that it's not even an interpretable number 666 from the Bible. It's like he was saying that it could be like 616 or like or it could be completely something different altogether, like geometrically related. So it's just like this idea that we glom on to something evil happening behind the scenes, and because we heard of it before, it just happens to morph into something greater than we have control over. And I think that could happen again, I guess, with technology, because now we're getting to a point with artificial intelligence, and you know, Elon Musk is bringing back this idea, or really leaning into this idea that we should put microchips in our heads that can do certain things for us. And I don't know, man. I'm going down a rabbit hole in my mind. I don't think that Satanism is going to make a comeback anytime soon, but I could see
whole. You mean Satanic Panic?
Or Satanic Panic. I don't think that it's going to come back anytime soon, but I can definitely see holes through which it could leak through again in the near future.
Yeah, I can definitely see that too, especially with newer technology that people are afraid of. More specifically, the older folks that are afraid of it because they don't understand how it works. And I think that's the main crux of any type of panic, not just satanic panic, of a changing world in which we are quick to demonize things that we don't understand. And that's, I think that that's just human nature. I think that's just how we evolved. Because, you know, when you were in that hunter-gathering village, society, whatever you didn't know, you assumed to be a threat. Because if you didn't, you're putting your life at risk. And I think that's something we've carried on for thousands upon thousands of years. And the way that we do it is through intellect now, just our methods of thought.
That's a good point. I never thought of that. Like, you know, the shifting from the hunter-gatherer necessity to take action, and having that be replaced by academics and the way we think and argue and philosophize and stuff. But that doesn't have to necessarily just be modern day. We can even go back to the time of, like, say, Socrates or whatever, like whenever they really started to lean into philosophy and record all that stuff. And I know your favorite moment in human history, the great burning of the Library of Alexandria, when we lost like 1,000 years of advancement.
I know. Man. I know.
Anyway.
That's sad. That's sad. Yeah, but I think the last thing I want to say on this is that it's interesting to analyze something like this that happens so close to us and, you know, actually do a deep dive into it to understand, like, hey, this is mainly brought out of fear. Nobody was, like, spreading the message of sacrificing babies to the devil. You know, it was just, like, a change of values in the sense that it wasn't as conservative and whatnot anymore through music and all these different changes that were happening all at once. But yeah, this was an interesting conversation to have. I know we said we're going to talk about the Satanic Panic, Satanism and stuff, but we kind of discussed everything with regards to Satan. Like, we went down the satanic panic. We talked about the media that we were exposed to and how that was deemed as potentially satanic. And, you know, essentially looking at it from this perspective was really interesting and an interesting discussion, because you could see how easy it is for people to overreact to things they don't like, or how they could quickly overreact to a changing world that scares them. And if it scares them, most people will have a fallback, especially if they're religious and they're Christian, that this is of the devil. And like we addressed earlier, you know, things we don't understand, we tend to fear.
Yeah. I still say that, and the final thing I'll say is I really do believe that, I don't know how it's going to happen, but I really do think that the evolution of religion is going to take us into a crazy pathway, that in the same way, like I was talking about earlier, if we could talk to somebody from 1,000 years ago who was Christian and compare to the things that we do today and the things that we deem okay societally, they would be horrified probably. So in the same way that, like, you know, you or any other kind of like Christian or Catholic or whatever would like fast forward 1,000 years from now. And if you like, you know, I just imagine religion and Christianity being so, if we're still around as a species, I just imagine it being so different to where we're like, what is happening? And that kind of like, that, like one of my, like one of the craziest postulations of that, or the ideas of that would be like, you know, if Satanism merged with Christianity and we saw, like I said earlier, we saw, humans saw, Satan as more of a Krampus character where he like works with God to try to like do terrible things to you, or like, you know, have you do terrible things. But in reality, he's still good because he's trying to help God get you to go to God. And I just imagine, like, imagine you woke up 1,000 years from now, you'd probably shit yourself, like whatever crazy like flying spaghetti monster actually being believed in. Or like, what was it? There was that one South Park where Cartman goes in the future to get his Okama games, or his like his video game platform or whatever, and like society is just completely bonkers, and it's just, I just see that happening.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, but you know, we'll just have to wait and see what happens in our lifetime, but you never know how these things go. Yeah. But I also want to reiterate to everyone, you know, this is just a commentary, a type of discussion that we have when we're not on camera. Yeah. And we just decided to record this.
We said that earlier too, right? It's kind of like back in the old days where we'd have a beer and kind of just be philosophy heads or whatever.
Folks, if you get this far into the episode, remember, don't take this seriously. This is for conversation and entertainment purposes. And maybe, who knows, it'll spark some philosophical debate for you.
Yeah.
But we'll leave you with that. And always remember to rag on the hag.
Rag on the hag.
Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at TW Road Podcast and follow my TikTok at TWR Podcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.